The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Thank you, Gil.
So, good morning, everyone. And I was kind of delighted, happy to hear Nancy's announcement about Thursday evening beginning again. We had a Thursday evening sitting at IMC for, I think, 30 years, and maybe more. And for many of those years, I taught it, and when we were in Palo Alto and beginning years here at IMC. And I am very fond of it, and it continued very nicely with wonderful teachers. Andrea Fella, and taught for many years, and a number of the new teachers taught it, and most recently Tanya taught it. And so it was paused for a while, and for about 6 months, and now we're starting again. So I'm just delighted to have it. So the idea of starting it up is to start it up with an intro class, so that it's kind of, for people who are new, there would be a kind of entry into that Thursday evening. And so I'm just... I want to repeat what Nancy said as a kind of celebration. So, a story, a fable maybe, that I'm fond of is that you might have heard from me before, of a young woman, maybe a teenager, who their family moves for a year to a new country far from where they are. And it's a country, and it happens to be there's a Buddhist monastery right near where they live. And so the teenager walks in and is curious about it and meets the abbess and gets introduced to meditation. Lo and behold, the monastery has a Thursday evening meditation for the public. So she starts going to it. And she learns to meditate during that year. And then after a year, their family's going to go back to a place where there's no meditation in their land. There's no Buddhism. And so she goes to the abbess and asks her, when I go back to my country, how do I continue my meditation training? How do I keep learning more? And the abbess said, well, when you go back to your place, ask around for all kinds of people, for the person who knows how to listen the best, the best listener in the community. And when you identify that person, go have them teach you how to listen. And that'll teach you all you need to know for meditation. There's something very closely associated with the ability to listen well with mindfulness. We say that in vipassana, it means clear seeing, and we can translate it to listening, that we're cultivating clear listening. And I suspect that most of you see more clearly than you listen, especially when you listen to other people speak, that some people don't really know how to listen. Some people, I get the sense, never occurred to them to listen to someone else, to really listen, unless it was as a prompt to be able to speak and speak and speak. And then we listen through the filter of our ideas, our feelings, our associations to people, our desires, our fears. There's a lot that's behind listening that we're often invisible to us. But to listen well is to listen in both directions, to be able to listen clearly to what people are saying and to listen clearly to what's going on inside. What's the layer just beneath the words you hear from someone else? What is your inner speech? What's your inner thoughts and ideas, emotions and feelings? What's going on there? And it's easy enough to sometimes be pulled into the conversation. So the subject of the conversation, what you have to say, what the person's saying, almost blind you from really having a clear self-awareness, presence here. And the cost of that is that we don't listen well when we have a whole backlog or a whole kind of background context of thoughts, reactions, judgments that are going on, and we don't know we have them. We're kind of hearing through the filter of those, that background. And it's not wrong to have a background, but it's all those thoughts and ideas and opinions you might have, desires and aversions. What we want to do in this practice is to know them and take them into account. And then if you really know them well and take them into account, you might decide a few of them, just a few maybe aren't needed. And you can put them aside. You know, let me be careful here. Let me listen without that filter. And let me, what happens if I can listen without any filters at all? Or maybe there's a more useful filter to listen to someone. If you're listening to someone speak and something about what they had said triggered some desire you have, they say, I need to talk to a friend. I'm having a hard time. I recently went back to St. Louis and it was, hard. And I want to talk to someone. Maybe someone to hear me as I talk. Well, St. Louis is where you met your childhood sweetheart that didn't go so well. And so you're listening to them, but really, relationships are difficult. That relationship was difficult. And I don't know about this person now. And it's a whole different whole world going on. Maybe if you really know how much that's triggered in you, maybe you say, wait a minute. My friend is suffering. What if I listen through the filter of that? The person's suffering. How will I listen if I really want to know my friend? Maybe I will have thoughts. Maybe I'll have questions. Maybe I'll be listening to something. Maybe I'll be listening to what's behind the words. Maybe I'm listening to understand. And, they said X, Y. Does that mean Z? No, it means X, Y, and A for them. And wow, okay, so it's more complicated than I thought. And let me listen and find out. So, sometimes we can change the context through which, the lens through which we're listening in a way that's more beneficial. And sometimes we can drop a lot of the lenses and we can just listen clearly. And the same skill is what we're learning to do in meditation. We're learning to do that to be present for ourselves. And here, meditation, in some ways, it's easier because maybe if your eyes closed, you are a little bit more internal. You might be more a little bit oriented towards what's going on in there. And that can mean one of two things. Ideally, it means that you see it much more clearly, what you're doing in there, and you're more likely to see what to be involved in, what to let go of, right now I just want to be with my breathing. I don't need to think about, high school sweethearts that didn't work out. And so you stay present. Sometimes in conversation, it's so easy to lose ourselves in it that we don't really track ourselves that well. And we don't really track that we're being spinning out into our thoughts and ideas. And maybe we even stop listening sometimes. I've been with people whom I saw in their eyes that I seemed to disappear. They were so involved in the conversation. Like I felt like I can go like that. And, with my hand in front of their eyes do you know that I'm here? Kind of really absorbed into some kind of preoccupation. And maybe I've been that way too. Conversations are kind of sometimes a place where people lose a lot of their mindfulness. So, and sometimes we do it in meditation as well. But to listen well. So listening, I like to think that listening is celebrated or has an honored place in Buddhism because in ancient India, when time of the Buddha, there was no audio dharma. You couldn't just get your device out and listen to any talk you wanted to that's ever been given in the last 10 years. And there were no books. There was nothing recorded. There was no libraries. And knowledge, information, religious teachings, it all went through oral transmission. Listening to someone speak, listen to someone chant, listening to someone tell a story, listen to someone singing. But it was all through hearing that people learned about just about everything that is transmitted, and you know, like we do now with books and things like that. And so when the Buddha was going to tell some people something really important in his teaching, he would preface and he'd say, okay, listen carefully. Listen carefully now. Because that was the vehicle. With the implication there's ways of listening carefully and the ways of listening casually or not carefully. Be really present here. Now this is important. And it was particularly important back then because if someone had something really significant to say, really important to say, you couldn't go look it up later. Can you give me the reference? You know, and then you go to the library. The only library that existed was in your own memory. So you had to listen well enough, not only to understand, but let it sink in or fill or be really present well. 40 years ago, when I was a student at San Francisco Zen Center, there was a venerable elder Buddhist teacher in the West who came to teach, give a talk there, and he came along with a senior student. And so he gave a nice talk to the Zen students. That was, you know, I don't remember what he said exactly. But then he turned to his student who'd been listening and asked the student to give a summary of what he just said. And the custom of that teacher, his students had to listen so carefully to what he said that they had to, at the end, they'd have to be able to summarize it for everyone else. Wow, okay. Now you really have to listen, you know, really take it in. And so you know, you had to listen, you had to understand, and you had to memorize, which means that you have to be actively engaged in a certain kind of way. And what you learn in that being more active, in listening that way, is also sometimes what's needed to be mindful in meditation. And the art of meditation is how can you be deeply relaxed, at ease, but also really awake, really kind of energized in a certain way, to really be present without actively thinking you have to memorize anything, but so you can take it in deeply so that you would know later, oh, this is what happened. And this is the way I was trained in mindfulness when I first was introduced to this practice in Burma. We were all told to have a little notebook. We would write field notes about what happened in our meditation on retreat. And it was really field notes. It was just really like my breathing was shallow. I noticed it. When I noticed it, it relaxed a little bit. It was still kind of shallow. I continued meditating. And then later I noticed that it had gotten really deep and quiet. Something, you know, it was never any commentary, no judgments, no story, no explanation, no why, just field notes. And so when we meditated, we had to be alert enough to recognize what was happening so that we would remember it to write it down later. And I found that it was really helpful for me. It kind of created a kind of alertness, aliveness. I kind of like delighted in this aliveness to go, oh, okay, what's happening here? Let me take it in. Let me feel it and be with it. And it protected me from a wandering mind. It took me away because then I wouldn't have anything to say except my mind wandered for 45 minutes. And that wasn't so good to tell the teacher. And, so just be present. And so it turns out that the word sati, the Pali word for mindfulness, has a kind of secondary meaning, or derived from, etymologically, from a word that means memory, to remember. And I think it's such an important idea, remember, that I hope I get away with playing with the English language and say to remember is to remember, bring all the members back together. We're trying to be so present here now that all of who we are gets to be come back together and be part of the picture, be connected our body, our emotions, our thoughts, and how we are with other people. Really, we recognize, how am I with them? What's operating when I'm listening to someone else? Am I mostly afraid? Am I mostly concerned with my opinions? One of the ways that I have been training people at IMC and some of the programs we have here, some of you have been in them, is how to be good listeners in conversation. And sometimes we do that here, Sunday even, but when some of these year-long programs I teach, we have people kind of form some dyads, small groups, and I often introduce them to people. This is not a talking exercise. They're going to get given a prompt to talk about. It's a listening exercise. And when it's your turn to talk, you're just giving other people a chance to listen. But it's really a listening practice for all of you, with the idea that if it's a talking exercise, people are more likely to think about what they're going to say when it's their turn. And then they're not listening. And then I often tell people, when it's your turn to speak, only say one point. Say it well, but not with a too long of a story. Because the idea is you want to offer one point so people have something to listen to, but so there's lots of time to hear what the one point the other people say. Because if you hear what they say, when it comes back to you, you might say something you never dreamt of before. If you're the first person and you have a 10-minute monologue in a 10-minute exercise, you'll never hear what they have to say. And you're probably telling people what you already know. But if you are brief, let other people be brief, kind of, and it comes back to you, you might have been influenced by what they said. It triggered something, a memory, an idea, and you find yourself now sharing something that's brand new. So the idea of training people how to converse in ways so that the conversation becomes dynamic, the conversation becomes something new starts becoming created, rather than just repeating the old stories, because it's so important that people know your story. That's important sometimes. But there's something, a whole other thing that many people, I think, would be really useful to learn. This art of staying in a dynamic conversation, which requires being a good listener, knowing how to listen well, knowing how not to prepare and be caught in the reactions, and knowing how to speak from some deeper place inside when it's your turn to speak. And to listen well, I think is you're more likely than to be something that's quiet inside, so that you have access to some deeper source inside when it's your turn to speak, some newer understanding, as opposed to staying on the surface level of your life, the stories, the ideas, the opinions that you might have that people are so quick to want to tell. And so in the time of the Buddha, listening was so important. That was the medium for it all. And probably they didn't have to teach people how important it is to listen well, because that's what there was. And so the disciples of the Buddha, the people who were close disciples, they are referred to in the ancient language as the listeners. Savaka means to the ones, those who listened. And so that's how they're remembered. It's those people who sat with the Buddha and really listened. And they listened so deeply that they became the next generation of teachers. So how do you listen that deeply? How do you really are present? And so some of this also relates to how you listen to a Dharma talk. And there's many ways of listening to a Dharma talk. It's many ways of listening to a conversation. And it varies in context and varies in what's needed. And in terms of a Dharma talk, people go through phases, what they need to hear and how they need to listen. But at some point in practice, especially since we meditate before a Dharma talk, sometimes listening to Dharma talk becomes an extension of the meditation. Rather than listening for information, you're listening for something deeper. You're listening for what can wash through you, ideas, the tone of voice, the pacing, the feeling in the room, more than the ideas. And I've had situations where I listened to Dharma talks where I felt radically changed by the Dharma talk. I entered into a kind of a deep state of concentration, listened to it, very calm. And when I left, I realized I couldn't remember anything from the talk. I had listened well. In that context, it taught me something. It connected me something deeper than the ideas of the talk. And other times, it's the ideas that really spoke to me. And something went off, and something beautifully woke up in my mind, ideas, associations, and I became a different person. Wow, I never thought of that before. And then I would go home and be thinking about it and working at it and mulling it over and digesting it. And that was the important thing. But to hear that just now I gave two different ways you might listen to a Dharma talk, it's possible for you to reflect on this. Oh, there's a choice in listening to Dharma talk. It's not just sitting here to be entertained. You know, it's not just sitting here to be a passive recipient of something and sit back and, you know, and judge what's happening and measure it against, you know, like I could be watching Netflix or something. How is it that you're taking it in? How are you listening? How are you present? In a way that's be meaningful for you, important for you. What would be useful for you in how you listen to a talk? So listening well. And one of the ways to listen well is, sometimes is to ask questions. Sometimes you can ask the person you're with questions to learn more. Sometimes it's the art of kind of open or broad or open questions that just can be interpreted many ways because you want to just give the person lots of room to share what's important for them. I mean, it could be something like, oh, tell me more. Is there anything more you want to say about that? That's a very broad question. And so it gives them permission to find themselves what's important. Or rather than you asking like the most precise detail, you know, that's important for you. That seems really important to you. How is that important? Or, wow, there was a something really profound happened for you or significant, or what are the values that went into that decision? You know, so just kind of to ask more. And sometimes you can ask deepening questions, like if you ask, what are the values, or how is that meaningful for you that you went to the wedding? That's a little bit different than, you know, what clothes did the couple wear? That's nice, But what was meaningful for you about being there? That's, you get a whole different answer. But this, to ask, you know, what are you listening for? You're listening for the humanity of the person and the fullness, the heart of the person. What are the emotions that are underneath the words? Can you listen what's behind there? What's their background? What's going on? When is that intrusive? When is that kind of going, you know, you're going into someone's private life? And when is it welcomed? And how do you listen? And you ask questions about that. You know, how are you feeling about that today? That's very broad. They can probably not feel like you're probing. Then they might say, okay. Then you say, okay. That's all they want to say. And then, or they might say, wow, thank you for asking. I didn't realize that I was still anxious, that caring. I didn't realize. Thank you. And now I understand myself better. So to listen well, to listen with clarity, to think of listening as an extension of meditation, or think of listening well, learning the art of listening, as something to learn, as an art to learn. I suspect a lot of people in our culture have never even thought that listening is a skill that we can get better at. And so now that you've heard this, for some of you, how can you imagine learning that skill, developing it? There are books on listening. There's articles about listening. You know, so how would you become a better listener? And how is it that listening well directly benefits you as a meditator? Is there something you can learn in listening, so a way that you can be in listening that really supports the strengthening of your capacity to be really aware when you meditate? Listening cultivates mindfulness. Listening cultivates compassion. Listening can cultivate empathy and compassion, care. And so all those also can be cultivated in meditation. We're cultivating mindfulness. We're cultivating concentration. We're cultivating compassion and care as we're present for ourselves. What you learn in really listening well to others, can that translate to how you meditate better? And as you learn how to meditate better, what is it you can learn from that for how to be a better listener? So those are my thoughts for today. And partly because we have a tea, and partly after all this, I should give you a chance to try. So we'll take about, you know, maybe 5-6 minutes for those of you who would like to just turn to, you know, one or two people next to you and have it just say hello and introduce yourself. It is tea, so it's nice for people to say hello and people are new to be welcomed. And if you don't want to do this, you can certainly, when I finish speaking, you're welcome to go. You can come back for the tea if you want, walk around the block. And some people don't choose not to be part of these discussions, but they stay in the room meditating or sit quietly with their eyes closed. And that's actually quite beautiful, too. I think of it as supportive of everyone else. And it's sometimes quite lovely, the way of being present, to hear all the happy sounds of talking around it, not participating. So whatever you're comfortable with. But the suggestion is that share maybe one point, one example, of a time in your life that you felt well listened to. And say something a little bit of what that was like. And have a little conversation back and forth about that, and then another person can have a turn to talk. And remember, be brief and see how much you can go around and around and see what that does for each other. Is that okay? And as you form little groups, like one or two people, look around, make sure no one's left alone. Because sometimes people coincidentally just look in the opposite direction and one person's left there sitting like, what do I do now? So just let's be inclusive and... So, I'll ring a bell when it's time to stop, and we'll come back and talk a little bit more as a group. So please. So that felt like a lot of energy. So what would happen if we take a minute to sit quietly and for you to check in with yourself, and I'll ask you a question at the end of the minute. So if there's a question during this little quiet time right now for you to reflect on. In what ways were you a good listener in that conversation? And in what ways could you have been a better listener? Okay, thank you. So anything any of you would like to say at this point, as we have just a few minutes left, a short comment, and anything about listening or the talk or this questions and this meeting or discussion you had?
Thanks, Gil, for the talk about listening. It was really helpful. I'm wondering, though, what do you do with all your feelings, thoughts, and everything you want to say? Like, especially if you're catching up with a friend or something's on your mind that's bothering you, like, what would you recommend to... I mean, this is stuff that comes up for me a lot when I try to meditate, too. It's just all these thoughts and...
Yeah.
Or, like, discomfort, you know?
Yeah. So there's lots one could possibly say, because the question you're asking is a really good one, and it's like the tip of the iceberg for being a human how to be a human being. So there's a lot I could say, but I'll say something now. One thing is, with certain friendships, you can say what's happening for you. You know, I have all the stuff inside that I feel like I want to share. I know we don't have much time, and I'm not expecting to, but I just want to let you know this is what's inside of me right now. Just so they know too, it's shared. Oh, okay, that's the situation, and okay, my friend is this way, I know her better now, and this is good. So just share what's happening, and who knows what will happen. Once you share what's going on underneath you with your friend, that allows something new to unfold that neither one of you could have ever imagined. So you might try sharing it. It might put the person says, I can cancel my next meeting. And I want to hear. So let's go for a walk and I'll really listen. Who knows what will happen? The other is, the second, that's the first thing. The second thing is try to listen, like in meditation, try to listen or feel what's behind all of it. If you're able to go deep, deep inside, is there a common denominator, is there a common source for all these different things you want to say and be involved in and do? And it might be that they all trace back to kind of like one primary feeling or motivation or impulse. And what is that? Can you really discover what that is? And if you do, does that change what the conversations can be about or change what's important for you?
Great, thank you.
The question that's on my mind is about discernment. So when you're listening to someone, how do you have what type of a filter is useful to have good discernment?
Well, that's the question. I would like to propose that the best answer I could give is keep asking yourself that question. And there's two reasons for this, replying to that. Very, in some ways, it's unsatisfying that I should answer that way. But I want to explain why it's wise. One is that there is no one answer to that question. But I think what's a really wise life is a life that keeps asking that question. So you, in each situation, you're oriented towards discovering what it means here and now. So I love it that you have it. So, but keep asking it. And then the question is, you know, how are you discerning? Depends on if you understand the situation well. Is it the situation that's important, or is it you? And if you know the difference between those two, it might help you understand the answer to your question.
Thank you.
Right next to you.
Thank you, Gil, for the talk. The question I had was, I heard you say that if you're having like a long monologue of yourself talking, you're not really hearing the other person. And I'm wondering about the opposite of that. What if the other person has a really long monologue and they're holding you hostage? any tips for how to handle that?
Yes. So, again, it depends a lot on who the person is. If it's a really good, trusted friend, you might point that out. You know, I've been listening now. You know, thank you. This is sounds like this is really important for you, and I want to check in with you right now, make sure that we're on track, because I'm beginning to zone out. It's been 20 minutes now. And we're close and important, and, you know, can we take this into account? And how should we go forward now? So if it's really good, some people you can't do that with. You know, that they would get angry, they would be upset or something. So you have to be discerning. Sometimes you have to be clever and insert something that changes the direction of the conversation. And sometimes it's as big as, excuse me, you know, I hear you, but I really need to go to the bathroom. and you don't have to tell them what you're going to do in the bathroom. you're just catching your breath and making a pause in the conversation. So there's all kinds of strategies of what to do. But one of the really good things to do always is when someone is talking a lot, try to listen carefully to why they might be doing this. What is going on more deeply for that person? Because everyone has depth. Everyone has a background that's probably been difficult. Everyone's been shaped by the life they've lived. And so try to listen more deeply. Why is this person going on and on? What's the need this person has? Recently I had that situation in a social situation with someone, And I just stayed and listened and listened and participated, asked questions and commented. But I was kind of surprised at how long this person was going to go on and change the subject and this thing and this thing. It's all about the person's life. And I kind of come, what's going on here? And I said, oh, this person actually, I don't think, spends a lot of time with friends. So it doesn't really have a chance to actually share what's going on, their excitement about their life. So, oh, and then I relaxed more. Okay, I'll just go along with this.
Thank you so much. And I also loved the suggestion about seeing things through the lens that person is suffering. That's really helpful.
Yeah. And then we can be maybe more patient or understand. And, you know, and occasionally, very occasionally, you have to be wise about this. You listen to something and you insert, you're able to say, oh, it seems like you're having a hard time. And that opens the door. Just come, oh, yes, the person, oh, yes, it's true. And then they don't need to tell you the story so much anymore. Now you're into what's more going on. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so at least in Buddhism, the ideal is we want to care for everyone. Everyone's important. So we should stop because we do have the tea and some people have things to go to. But I'll stay here if you want to come and talk to me. But there is tea, so please, everyone's welcome to stay and say hello. And I don't know how long it's before they set it up, but it'll be soon. And please stay and enjoy the company. Thank you.